Hadassah, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Becheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. So in this week's Parsha, we're going to be exploring the story of Chet Eitz Hadas. This is one of the most fundamental stories in Torah, right? This is where the beginning of all sin, of all evil starts, right? The primordial sin. And in this mimer, we're going to be exploring some of what that sin is all about. Before we dive in, let's read the story as it's told in the third chapter of Bereishis, close to the end of the Parsha. We're going to read just the part of the story that's most relevant to what the mimer is going to discuss. So really a lot of the drama in the story. Before actually we dive into the story, I just want to make one comment, which is that the stage that the Torah sets for this story, and the stage is set in the previous parak, is that the story takes place in a place called Gan Eden, right? And, you know, colloquially, we use the term Gan Eden to refer to the place we're going to go after we pass away, right? So often we think of Gan Eden as the spiritual place, a place where souls exist. And yet, when we read the Torah, the Parsha in Bereishis, it's clear that Gan Eden is a place, right, where Adam and Chava actually lived, and there's a whole story that happens with things that they're actually doing in that physical location. So there's a lot of discussion of, like, how do we understand what Gan Eden is in this context, right? Are we talking about a spiritual reality? Are we talking about an actual events that took place in an actual garden, right, where there are real trees? And especially when you look at the story that we're about to read of Chet Eitz Hadas, and we talk about the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, and, like, it almost sounds like we're talking about these mystical ideas. It doesn't sound like a real story. Really, like, this whole story is just about somebody eating a fruit, and then because you ate that fruit, that therefore you're going to get all this, like, this whole existential change in reality because of this one food that I ate. Like, it seems so...
almost like a fantasy world.
Yeah. It sounds like a fairy tale a little bit. And of course, there's many ways to approach this, but I think the classic way of understanding it, this is actually explained really beautifully by one of the Hasidic commentaries called the Be'er Mayim Chaim, where he describes how really Gan Eden exists at both levels, right? We have to understand it as both a physical place, right? A physical, you know, garden where there were actual trees, and the Torah is describing real events that took place, but those are almost like a mirror of something much more spiritual, much more cosmic that's going on. And sort of this physical, he sort of spends a lot of time describing, like, what is a tree, right? A tree, a physical tree is sort of just this very simple manifestation of, very coarse manifestation of something much, sort of a concept, a reality, a spiritual reality that's much, much more abstract and much more real. So I think when we read the story, we have to kind of see it on both levels, both as an actual story, where all the events that the Torah is describing happened, but it's also obviously telling us about an event that's happening on a much more sublime level besides just, you know, the practical story. So we kind of have to read it on both those levels. Okay, so let's actually read the story inside. Perikim will begin. La'nachash haya arum mikol chayas hasada. The snake was, the Torah uses the word arum. Arum, in this context, translates as he was the most cunning or the most sly, but as you'll see, we're going to see that word arum come up again later on to mean something else, to mean naked. But in this context, it's the simple meaning is that the snake was the most sly of all the animals. Asher asa Hashem lekim, which Hashem made. Ve'amar le'isha, and this snake says to the woman, af ki amar lekim lo tochlu mikol eitz hagan. Did Hashem really tell you that you should not eat from any of the trees of the garden? So, Vatemar Isha, and we're referring to her as just the Isha because she doesn't have the name Chava yet. That's going to happen later. So the woman says, Ahla Nachash to the snake, and we pre eat the Shabbasai Chagan, but the fruit tree that is the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the garden, Amar Lakim Laita Echlubi Menu, Hashem says, do not eat from it. Vlai Sukuba, don't touch it. Pentumusin, lest you die. Vayamar Hanachash al Isha, so the snake responds to the woman, Lai Maistumusin, nope, you're not going to die. Why? Ki adei alakim, because Hashem knows, ki b'yei machalcha mimenu, the day that you eat from it, v'nikachu einechem, your eyes will be opened, v'hi yisem kelikim yadei atei vera, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Okay, so he says, nope, you're making it's not what's going to happen. Don't be alarmed. You're not going to die. You're actually going to achieve this really remarkable status. You're going to be like God, knowing good and evil. But Tira Isha and the woman saw Kitava eats lamachol, that the tree looked very good to eat, the chisavu huleinayim, and it was very attractive, the nakhmana eats lahaskil, and it was something that was desirable because it could make you wise, the tikach bipire, and she takes from its fruit, the techol, and she ate. And then the tizingam isha ima vayechal, and she also gives to her husband for him to eat as well. And indeed, what happens as soon as they eat from the tree? Both of their eyes are opened. And they knew that they were naked. So they sewed together these fig leaves and they made themselves these garments. And then they hear the voice of Hashem going, traveling through the garden. Towards the direction of the day, of the sun, and Adam and his wife hide from Hashem, amongst the trees of the garden. And Hashem says to Adam, and he says, where are you? And Adam responds, I heard your voice in the garden. I was afraid. Why was I afraid? Because I am naked, and therefore I hid. So Hashem responds to him, V'yemer, and he said, Mihika b'cha ki'ira matzah. Oh, where did you get this idea? Who told you that you're naked? Did you eat from that tree that I told you not to eat from? So here comes the blame game. V'yemer ha'adam, and Adam responds, Ha'isha shana sata imadi, the woman that you gave me, he nasata li min ha'itza v'yechal. She's the one who gave me from the tree, and then I ate. So Hashem then goes to Chava, to the woman, and Hashem says to the woman, what did you do? And the woman says, it was the snake who enticed me, and then I ate. Okay, and then the continuation of the story is Hashem punishes the snake, he punishes Adam, and he punishes Chava, and it goes through what each of their punishments were, and then Adam and Chava are both expelled from Gan Eden. Okay, so that's the story as it's told in the Torah. Lots of questions come up when you're reading the story, both on like just the storyline, and also I guess some like fundamental philosophical questions really emerge from the story. DC, maybe tell me what questions you think are like the obvious ones that come up.
I mean, so there's very basic, obvious questions like, I don't know, in my mind, first of all, I'm like, hey, why does the snake want Chava to eat from the tree?
Right. What's his motive?
That's just something that comes up in my mind. What's his motive? Yeah. Why is death being equated with knowing the difference between good and evil?
Right.
How do they think that, why does Adam listen to Chava? Why do they think that they can hide from God? Those are like the ones that pop into my head.
Yeah, why do you think they can hide from God? I think also like, right, I think is sort of what you're sort of what you were getting at with that is also like, so like if we're equating death and the das of Tevara, it sounds like we're saying knowledge of good and evil is bad, right? But like, why would knowledge be a bad thing, right? That sounds like a good thing, right? And I'll tell you, a lot of the commentators here ask, like, you know, I guess a lot of it depends on how we define das, right? So there's a few different definitions given by different commentators. Like the Ramban says das means is like another word for ratzayin, for will, desire, right? So really das tevara means like the desire for good and evil. So essentially eating from the tree of good and evil is giving them, implanting in them this desire to do evil. But like if that's true, then you have a lot of like fundamental questions, which is like, well, if they didn't have any desire for evil, how did they have free choice to choose to eat from the tree, right? So there's no bechira. And also, was that really how God wanted to design us to begin with, to not have free choice? Like, isn't that the whole point of Hashem creating human beings is for us to have free choice? So like, was the original intention for us not to have free choice? That's like a really, and again, why is Hashem sort of painting this as like, this is the punishment, you're going to get this knowledge, right? It would seem to be like, that's sort of the fundamental to what a human being is. Yeah, so I think that's sort of like some of the general themes that are sort of underlying the story. So with that, let's try to go into the mimer a little bit and see where it goes. Okay, so the mimer begins by quoting a pasuk that actually shows up a little bit later in this parak. After the whole story of, after Hashem tells each of them about their punishments, and then Hashem makes them clothing, and then Hashem says, V'yam Hashem lekim, Hashem says, Amhid adam haya ka'achad mimenu ladas taivara. Now, man has become like one of us, having the ability to know good and evil. Right? So it sounds like the snake's prophecy came true, like the snake's prediction came true. Va'ata pen yishlach yadeh, v'lakachas gam eitzachayim v'achol v'chay l'aylam. So now, make sure not to take fruit from the tree of life, because then you will eat it and you will live forever. Right? And then after that, Hashem expels them from Gan Eden. So this is sort of like the pasuk which we're starting off with. Okay? So the mimer then goes through like a few questions, general questions about this story. Okay? So Yesh L'Haven. Aleph, number one. Mahu sha'al yedei etz hadas nifkechu einehem v'yes kelikim yedei tevara. What does it mean that through eating from the tree of knowledge, now their eyes are opened and they become like God, right? Or like the angels, knowing good and evil, right? Like, what's the mean? Like, what does it mean to know good and evil? Okay, how do we understand that term, that word, that those words, das tivara? V'gam mash amar Hashem alikim va'ata pen yishu yaday v'lakach gam mitzachayim ba'achol chay li'adam u'ma'ach patlay b'zeh hari ma'ach tziva yisei shalayt lechol hu gam kin g'day shalayamas, right? Why is Hashem like so nervous about them eating from the tree of life, right? It sounds like to begin with, Hashem intended for them to live forever, right? Hashem warned, and in fact, when Hashem initially warned them about eating from the tree, he said, don't eat from that tree because then you're going to die, right? So it sounds like Hashem doesn't want them to live forever. So why is he now saying, don't eat from the tree of life because then you're going to live forever? But Ayvahu Iker, and finally, and this is the main thing, so in the story, right? The Nachash says, guess what, guys? I have this little secret for you, that the real reason why Hashem doesn't want you to eat from this tree is because then you're going to know good and evil, and that's like the evil secret, right? But then he's actually right. He's not telling a lie. That's actually what happens. Hashem confirms what the Nachash said, right? So if this is like some secret that like the Chadam Chava didn't know about, like how did the snake know about it, right? Where did he get that idea from, okay? And he ended up being right, yeah? Okay, so that's sort of our starting point. So the im adam sheshama hatzivei mekadosh baruch hu lahikar b'zeh, right? Because if Adam himself, who heard the command directly from Hashem, didn't realize what the consequence of eating from the tree would be, rakib shutai sha'amr lai Hashem lakim kiyameh mechachem menu meis tamas, right? All Adam thought was exactly what Hashem told him, which was that the day you eat from it, you're going to die. But nakosh aniskar klash sheshama hatzivei hezeh, right? And it doesn't sound like the snake heard this command at all. And even if he did hear the command, how would he know, how would he be able to like figure out and deduce something additional that Adam himself could not deduce? Right, it sounds like we're saying in some way the snake is greater than man, but hold that play, and that sounds like ridiculous, right? How can we say that the snake had some deeper insight than Adam himself? Okay, so that's just setting up our questions. So the first thing we're going to do now is we're going to define what does das tivara mean, and we're going to sort of start by answering that second question, which is that why is it that, meaning the way we have to understand it is that in some way before they ate from the chit etz das, Hashem wanted them to live forever, but once they ate from the chit etz das, now that's a bad thing. Now living forever would be a terrible thing, and now Hashem says you can't eat from the etz chaim because then you're going to live forever, and that would be terrible. So what is this? What is das tivara, and why is it that, why is that considered like a negative thing which Hashem doesn't want them to do, to achieve or to acquire? Okay, so hine, tchili yisbar mashakasav ha'adam hayik echem yomenu l'das tivara. So let's first understand this concept of Hashem saying now man is going to be like one of us, knowing good and evil. Shehu ma'amar Hashem l'malachim, right? This is actually what Hashem is saying to the malachim. So it sounds like what Hashem is saying is that, yeah, above in heaven, right, there is this knowledge of good and evil, right? There is this awareness of what good and evil are. But nonetheless, the good and evil are not intermingled with each other. Right? It's very clear what's good and what's evil. Right? The evil is very much separate, segregated from the good. even though both good and evil are known there. Masha'in kein b'chinas etadas taivara, haino b'chinas taruvas hataiv imhara, shahara yainak mehataiv hataiv mehara b'hayu lachadam, right? What does this tree of knowledge of good and evil represent? Once that good and evil come down here, there's sort of this, like, this merging, right? Good and evil all become mixed together, right? And each of them kind of, like, leech off of each other, right? And it's no longer clear what's good and what's evil. Actually, the Rambam, I think this is just a really interesting point, because I kind of feel like it kind of fits in with what the Maimon is going to say here, but the Rambam actually defines the word das as he explains the difference between seichel and das. He says seichel is the way you approach things from, like, an objective perspective, right? So from the perspective of seichel, when I'm looking at something from a factual or an objective perspective, then I look at everything as, is this true or is this false, right? The earth is round is true, the earth is flat is false, right? I wouldn't say that, you know, the earth is round is good or attractive or beautiful, right? It's just a fact. It's true or it's false, right? But das is this, like, approaching the world from, like, this subjective bias perspective, right? Where everything is colored by my personal feeling towards it, right? My own prejudice towards that thing. So when we look at it from das, that's when we can use the terms taiv and ra, right? You saying something is good and evil is by definition an opinion, right? Is there some way there's my inclination either towards or repel, like some sort of attraction or repellent from this thing. And that's what we call das, right? So once we have this das of, right, this das of taiv and ra down here, then it's no longer sort of this objective reality of good and evil where they're all, each has their own box and each of them are separate, but it's sort of this, like, very subjective experience of good and evil where it all is sort of mixed together.
Just a question. Yeah. I don't know if you would know the answer. So before they eat from the Eitz HaDaas, does that mean that they have no subjective connection to good and bad? As in, once they eat from, it seems like once they eat from the Eitz HaDaas, good and bad become inextricably intertwined, and it's like, or maybe not inextricably, but extremely intertwined, and the job is sort of to untangle them. And they receive, they build this subjective connection to good and bad. But if they wouldn't do that, is it that there's no awareness of bad at all? Because obviously the bad exists if the Eitz HaDaas is existing. So what is the relationship with good and bad before they eat from the Eitz HaDaas?
Right. So yeah, the Maimor actually is going to address that, like, at the end. It's going to actually bring up that question of, like, yeah, well, I guess what was the relationship before? And what was, like, so to speak, the intention, had they not eaten from the tree, how would they have related to evil? And almost like, how would have, like, the purpose of creation been achieved without them having engaged in this process? So yeah, I mean, just the very short answer is that evil, they relate to evil, but as this entity outside themselves, right? Kind of like the difference between when you have a friend who has a negative influence on you versus, like, an internal tendency that's impacting you negatively. So the experience is very different, right? One is this external force, which is much easier to sort of see as something outside of yourself. I mean, it's still there and you can still grapple with it, but it's not the same as having this internal experience of evil. I think that's kind of like the general answer. But okay. Anyways, we were actually going to skip reading that part inside, so it's good you brought it up. Okay, the tzarech lahavin the haripirish eitz hadas teivara haynu l'shen yedia im beim kein lama nasa taruvas teivara machmas hadas b'teivara v'halei lamayla gam kein yedua teivara. So now we have to understand this again. Now the Maimor is going to say, how do we understand what the word das means, right? What's the difference between the das that we have in our world and the das that there is lamayla, right above, and why for us our das of teivara is something that's evil, something that's considered negative? Okay. So now he's going to introduce this concept of makif and pnimi, right? Which means that we can relate to things in two ways. Like the mashal that's given in one of the other, like, later mamarim is sometimes, let's say, like, children, right? So they can know that money exists, right? Like, they know that, like, my 4-year-old will, like, talk about money because she hears people talking about money. So she, like, has money and she, like, gives people, she'll, like, give, hand out her fake money to everybody, right? So they have this, like, this very vague concept of money, but, like, they don't have a real understanding, meaning even if they know the facts and they can repeat back to you, like, let's say a child who's a little bit older, they can repeat back what money is and what it does and why people, you know, how people relate to it. But there's not this like real sense of what the meaning of money is until you're like a more mature adult and you're actually engaging with it in that kind of way, right? So you can have a sort of this makif, right? Makif means like this sort of distant awareness of something, but it doesn't have any, it doesn't touch you or move you in any, it doesn't like, it doesn't resonate in your psyche in any deep way. And then you can have a more pnimi type of experience where like, it's not just that you know about this thing, but it's something that you know it intimately, right? It's like becomes part of the way you think, the way you identify yourself. Like you have like an associate, a personal association and connection to that thing. So that's going to be sort of the general understanding, these two different ways a person could have das.
But I would say maybe just suggest that maybe makif is, it's not just a childish understanding, because you could have a very sophisticated understanding of something, but it's just not internalized. Like,
right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you can have a very sophisticated, but it's still distant. Like it's, there are certain subjects that are almost impossible to internalize.
Right.
And
right.
You can have like, so they're like makif subjects, like even like certain understandings of God, where
right.
You can understand them in a very mind kind of way, or certain like abstract physics or whatever, where you're like, you're able to have an understanding of it, but it's still from a distance and it's not in an internalized way where you can't see how you're like bringing it into, it's never going to bring up an emotional response.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 That's right. Meaning it's not something, there's could mean different reasons.
It's not
why.
Simple per se. Right.
Right. Meaning it's not about being simple. It's more about being distant, right? That it's not, I don't have this personal connection to it. Right. Like, meaning there could be different reasons why there could, that distance could exist.
Right.
In a relationship to it. Yeah. Okay. Right. So ha'hefresh b'zeh hu inyan ha'hefresh min makif l'pnimi. Okay. So we're going to understand the difference between makif l'pnimi. Ki b'chinas yedias ha'tayva ra shalamayla hu b'chinas makif b'vad. So this knowledge of good and evil, the way it is above, it's just in this makif way, right? In this more distant, removed way. V'lechein yachol dias ha'havdala b'in ta'ilora. So that's why you're able to like, right? When you're removed from something, you're able to see it much more clearly, which is like why like we often will get advice from somebody who's objective, because from like within ourselves, when we're like trying to make judgment calls about our own life or about our own emotions, like everything just becomes all mixed together, and like we start, it's hard for us to differentiate things and like figure out like, this is, I'm feeling this because of that, and that has nothing to do with this, right? Everything just kind of becomes muddled up. And somebody who's objective, who's outside, who's seeing it from a distance, they're able to make more differentiations, right? So above, right, this das, you could have this das, but there's still this ability to differentiate between good and evil. Shiyada sarav, layachlefenev layamru b'tayv, right? You can know evil and not sort of mix it up with good, God forbid. Inyan, like there's this pasuk from Mishlei that says, Shema misbi adayim p'tetafish, that a spider grasps with its hands, v'hi bechaldi ha-malach, and it is in the palace of the king. This is like a pasuk that's brought up a lot in Chassidus just to sort of describe this concept of makif, right? Where you could have this, something that could exist somewhere, and let's say like the king could be aware that there's a spider in his palace, but like it has no, like it doesn't take up any mind space for him, right? It's like totally irrelevant. Right? It's like, even though it's in the palace of the king, it's just a spider, right? It has no significance. It's so small and insignificant compared to the context that it exists. Right? So there we could have this distinction between good and evil. Like we say, right? We separate between holy and unholy. Right? So we can have this knowledge of good and evil from a distance, and therefore they don't become intermingled with each other. So this is just a reference to this idea that the Ketairis had 11 ingredients. 10 is normally the whole number that represents the 10 spheres. And 11 is sort of like one addition to that. So that's this concept that when Kedusha invests itself in Klipa, there's like the 10 levels within which it does invest, and then there's always one level that's above, that's the makif, right? That's sort of hovering above and not actually investing in Klipa. I'm going to skip the parentheses here. V'hine ha-makif hu-gam d'eicha esach-hitzayinim k'nir b'tzir ha-ilon sh-ba-pardes b'makifim v'pnim ma'amun ma'atav ha-klipas ha-charim shal-makif. Right? This is another reference to this. Again, these are all sort of different references to just explain places in Kabbalah where we see this concept of makif, right? So this is another place in Kabbalah where we see this concept that it describes in Kabbalah that the makif rejects klipa, right? That klipa can, it's described that klipa is sort of like facing away from makif, which is sort of this concept that when we're looking at something from a distance, like evil doesn't have a real place. It doesn't have a real significance in the context of in a context where we're approaching it from a place of makif. Okay, so now all that to contrast that with Masha Inki and Bechinas Eitz Hadas Tevara, who Bechinas Pidimi. So that's in contrast to the Eitz Hadas Tevara, right, as it is in our world. Then it comes into this state of Pnimi, right? Ba'az ha-tayv mu'urabim hara mamash, and then the good and evil all becomes mixed together. Just something else that I was thinking about when learning this mimer is like, you know, we often, this concept of knowledge, right? That like, sometimes we can fool ourselves into thinking that, okay, I could just knowing about something doesn't impact me, right? Like, so like, you're scrolling through your phone on social media or whatever, and like an article pops up, you're like, oh, I'll just read it, why not, right? Or like a video pops up, I'll watch it, why not? Like, what's it gonna do to me, like, right? And I think this concept of the, like, as human beings in this world, like, there's no such thing as knowledge that doesn't like enter our psyche and impact the way we think and the way we feel and our psyche. Like, that's part of the way our world works, is that there's no such thing as knowledge that's just distant. That's just, I know about this, but it has nothing to do with me, right? Anything that we have to be discerning about what we allow into our minds, what knowledge we allow ourselves to absorb, because in our world, knowledge by definition is something that becomes a part of us and becomes mixed into our identity in some way.
And it's an interesting point that we're saying over here is that while it's still a makif, there's like, it's easy for us to like differentiate between things. Right, there's like clarity and things aren't all mixed up. So when it's still knowing it from like a distance, then it's much easier to make like differentiations. But once we've internalized it, that's when, and it becomes like what we're saying over here, an actual knowledge, then it becomes much more difficult to actually even like know the parameters of the idea even within yourself. Because it's all sort of mixed up within all the other things that are inside of ourselves.
Right.
And inside of our, like.
Right. Right. In a way, like before we've actually attained knowledge of something, that's when we have more power to be able to differentiate between this is good or this is not good. Like once it's actually entered our psyche, like it almost becomes, we don't have as much of that discernment.
Yeah. Where it's harder to like, there's so much information in the world. Yeah. And like we take it in and then it's like, what's actually true, what is in line with my intuition, what do I know is actually good versus what's noise. And once it's inside of ourselves, it becomes extremely difficult to make those differentiations. I think that's one of the things people struggle with.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the world where knowledge is so accessible.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. Okay, so now we're going to go back to our pasuk, right? The pasuk where Hashem says, right after this whole story is over, Hashem says, "Hina adam hayik echad mimenu ledas tayvara." Right now, man is going to be just like one of us, knowing good and evil. So, what's Hashem saying? "V'zayu shekosev hina adam hayik ke'echad mimenu." Right now, man is going to be like one of us. Right? What does that mean? "Pirish shehu hayik gam kein ke'echad mimenu." He's also going to be like one of us. "Pirish kamaisha bevchinas achtos dahainu lamaila yedei tayvara hatayv bahara kein hayik gam hu ayidei shetami itzadas amurav tayvara." Right? Which here, sure, the emphasis here is the ke'echad, right? That like for above, there's this echad, there's this oneness, there's this unity of good and evil, but for the person, right, for the human being, right, it's they're experiencing this good and evil, this knowledge of good and evil, but it's not, they don't quite have that same distance for it to be to be able to approach it from the right perspective, right? So that's why he says, "Ba'avalai hadab ramazik." So for the human being, it's going to be harmful. Ki areha adam hu mibchinas pnimius, because the human being is going to approach it from this pnimius perspective, right? This internalized perspective. Umayat shiyadahu min hara al yedei shatam meyetzadas hariyasarahu mei, right? As soon as he has this awareness of evil, it already becomes mixed in with his psyche. It's part of his identity, right? It becomes a voice in his own mind. V'yehu mamash murav barav, like my shulamayla, right? He himself becomes totally, like, absorbed, this evil becomes absorbed within him, right? Not the way it is above. Shafa pisha yedem gam mesara, because even though above there could be this awareness that evil exists, mekomaka muvduhu muruchak min hatayv v'yemay yiskarvas, right? There's this distance, there's this separation from the good, so that they're not it's not coming close. The fishu b'chinas makav, because it's approaching it from this distant perspective. Avala adam shu b'chinas pnimi, the human being who's approaching it from this internal, right, internalizing this knowledge, k'chayada gam hu min hara, azay yisarev hu gam hu mamashim hara, ki b'chinas pnimi si afshar b'yes kolkach mudo hara, right, because he's approaching it from that perspective, it's going to become totally absorbed with him, and he can't separate from that evil at all. There's actually an interesting Gemara that actually relates to this, that says, I can't remember which commentary quotes it, but there's a Gemara that says that the Nachash impregnated Chava. I think part of the Nachash's motive had to do with like being jealous of Adam and Chava, of Adam having Chava. And you can sort of see that concept here, where like before the sin, the Nachash, which sort of represents evil, is outside of them, right? It's distant from the person. And then when they sin, right, then it's almost like the Nachash becomes part of themselves, right? It becomes internalized within them, right? Which is sort of symbolized by Chava being impregnated by the snake.
Like you were saying before, like is the Yetzirah a friend from outside who's influencing you, or is the Yetzirah part of you, like you with yourself?
Yeah.
Which is obviously much more difficult to, first of all, even like we said earlier, even just like differentiate that's where this is coming from, and obviously to overcome it as well.
Yeah, sure. So as a result of all this, right, as a result of us attaining this das of type of where it becomes mixed in with us, what's sort of the result? Like, how does that change the course of history and the way humanity is going to be for the rest of time? For us, who kashim ayd l'hafrid asura, now it becomes very difficult for us to separate from evil. Elo malchama atzumahi, right? Now we have this battle, right? It's not like, we can no longer just approach the world from this, you know, very objective perspective where I'm here on a mission, I'm going to look at all the things, the good and the evil, and I'm going to be able to sift through them and like extract the good in the world. We don't have that anymore. Now there's this constant internal struggle. Right? There's each the nations, right? Which is a reference to Yaakov and Esav, which symbolize, right, good and evil within ourselves, they're always fighting, right? Pamaim zagever, pamaim chakanegever. Sometimes one will overpower the other, sometimes the other will overpower. Right, we see that throughout history, there's always been this like fluctuating back and forth. Right, so you have sometimes in history when like we're in a really good place, right, and there's lots of tzaddikim and we're like in a spiritual high, and then there's times in history when we're at a spiritual low, right, and that's part of this, you know, big picture of this evil entering our communal psyche. And that's having this constant battle. Right? Because we're all descending from Adam HaRishon, we're going to have which Adam HaRishon himself was fluctuating in these two directions constantly. All this has to go back to this concept of pnimius. Right? Because the moment that he was aware of evil, it already became part of him. It becomes this very, very difficult battle for us to separate it. Right? We're always like fluctuating back and forth. Okay, so now we're going to get into going back to that part of the story where it says that they realized that they were naked, right? And this is a lot of the Mepharshim discusses, right? What do you mean they realized? They didn't realize before. All of a sudden they woke up, right? Their eyes were open. Like, what does that mean? So he says, right? So before the sin, right, they were undressed, they weren't involved in marital relations, in order to have children, and there was no shame, right? Right? The same way we eat and drink, we don't experience shame for the most part for eating and drinking. So, you know, engaging in marital relations was exactly the same, right? Mitzvah Hashem, it's a mitzvah of Hashem. There was no shame attached to it, right? Like, where does shame come from? Shame comes from this sense of vulnerability, weakness, right? Like this, there's something about this that's, like, there's a personal weakness that I'm exposing here, right? That's where the shame comes from. But they didn't have that, right? It wasn't coming from a place of weakness. It was coming from a place of this objective sense of mission of, like, this is what Hashem wants. Like, there's no concept that there's any sort of, like, personal desire in this act. But after they ate from the tree of knowledge, then all of a sudden they had this, right, now the evil comes inside them, right? Now they have this personal drive, this personal subjective experience of desire and, right, everything comes through the lens of their own personal interests. Right, so then it becomes very difficult for them to sort of distinguish. Right, so again, so that sort of explains why all of a sudden there's this shame, right? All of a sudden they're running to cover up, right? They're looking for right, they're embarrassed because all of a sudden they have shame once this das comes into them. Right, so that's why Hashem, like, it's not, again, why was Hashem trying to protect Adam and Chava from this experience? Because again, das for them in their world would be very, very damaging, right? Very detrimental. Right, Hashem doesn't want them to have any experience of evil at all, right? It should be totally, completely holy. Hashem didn't want to sort of engage them in this, sort of expose them to this battle. I feel like this whole story of Chidei Tzedakah is almost like the story of losing innocence, right? It's like every parent is kind of trying to do this to their children, right? We want to protect our children from evil. We don't want them to have to struggle, especially if, like, there's things we struggled with. We don't want them to have that struggle, right? We want to sort of keep them safe from right? We want to keep them innocent in a certain sense. And sort of the whole Chidei Tzedakah story is almost like the story of them losing their innocence. And I think this whole idea of das, right, das tevara, is that, you know, losing innocence isn't just about, like, learning about new things, right? It's not that, like, it's not our exposure to knowledge that makes us sort of lose that sense of innocence. It's when we feel that knowledge is changing the way we think, right? Changing ourselves. When we, like, notice ourselves changing, right? The way, what I want, what I desire, the voices in my own head, that's what really, like, creates that disillusionment.
Or just the word shame here is really strong. Right. The shame that's associated with the, like, which is obviously not just about knowing what's happening or new information, but my emotional relationship to this knowledge.
Right, my emotional relationship to the knowledge, exactly. Yeah. Right, and that's what Hashem is trying to protect them from, right? So at this point in the Maamar, we're now going to go back to the part of the story where Hashem tells them, well, okay, now that you were supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge, I was trying to protect you from this. I didn't want you to get into this, but you did it. It's over. So now just don't eat from the tree of life. Okay, so what's that all about? Right? Why is Hashem so nervous about them living forever? So now they've already tasted the tree of knowledge, right? They've already, right, their innocence is gone, right? It's over now. As Amar, now he says, now just don't eat from the tree of life, right? Because then you are going to live forever. So what's the concern? So now Hashem is concerned. So now that you already have, like, evil absorbed within you, if you're now going to take from the tree of life, what's the tree of life? The tree of life is sort of this level that is higher than the Shvira. Shvira is a reference to Shvira Sakelim, which means that it's sort of like, if you would eat from the tree of life, you would sort of, it's almost like escaping or transcending this whole realm of good and evil, right? He's going to elaborate a little bit. Right? That's sort of like where the beginning of all death starts, right? Is from this Shvira, right? From, so that's sort of like almost like the beginning, the source of all evil in the world. And so eating from the tree of life is almost like getting past that, transcending that. Okay, so Shehid Khas Hamisa Vais Avas Itadas Tegara, right? So that's sort of the Shvira, sort of the beginning. That's sort of the source for this whole concept of death, this whole concept of good and evil, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which is sort of where evil resides in our world. So, but if you eat from the tree of life, right, since that's a level that's sort of beyond where death, the concept of death even originates, then you would live forever. So what does that mean? Right, so we have this pasuk from Iyov, right, that says, we say about Hashem, right, even if you're righteous, you can't give anything to him, and no matter how many sins you do, you're not affecting him, right? It's almost like Hashem has totally, like, good and evil are irrelevant to Hashem, right? He's beyond the whole construct of good and evil, is totally irrelevant to Hashem. And that, what that's referring to is sort of there's this level, this state of being where that's true, right? Where we can almost transcend the whole system of creation where there is this reality of good and evil. And that's sort of what the Eitz HaChaim represents. Mim kein af shemu'urav bara, haregam em ravu pasha'echa, v'yechol yischal adam. So therefore, if somebody taps into that level of reality, even if they have a lot of sins, right, those sins would become irrelevant and they could just live forever. And if that would happen, right, if he would sort of escape to that level of reality, then even the evil that exists within the human being would just last forever. Right, once the evil becomes part of you, you can't separate it from you. So if you live forever, the evil lives forever. Right, if he lives forever, the evil also does. That's exactly the opposite of what Hashem intends. Right? What's the whole purpose of creation is for us to eventually be able to eradicate evil, right? We want to destroy evil. Right? These are all different psukim. They're describing the destruction of evil that's going to happen. That's all going to happen when Mashiach comes. Right? What's the whole purpose of the whole history of Galus is just for us to be able to separate out, to sift through, pull out the evil, and ultimately destroy it. I feel like this whole section here, it's almost like sometimes, like when we realize that we've lost our innocence with something, right? There's something which used to be like totally removed from us, right? Totally out of our realm of reality, and then like we lose our innocence, right? It becomes part of our psyche, it becomes part of the way we think, right? A certain way of looking at things, certain beliefs, right? And sometimes when we realize we've lost our innocence, like there could be this sort of reaction of like, okay, you know, I just want to go back to the way it was before, right? I just want to like regain my innocence, go back to the way it was before any of this happened, like as if I never encountered evil. And it doesn't work that way, right? We can't like, you can't just escape, right? Once you've already engaged with the world, you've engaged with some sort of negative trait, negative force, right? Now, once you're already invested in that, you have to grapple with it, right? You have a totally different mission now, right? You can't just run away to the Eitz HaChaim and say like, okay, now I just want to like sort of pretend this never happened, right? Now we have to sort of live with this new reality and actually grapple with that evil. Okay. We're going to skip a little bit more here. There's going to be some discussion about how exactly we do, like how, like what our mission is now, right? After the fact that we've been eaten from the Eitz HaDas, Taibara, like what is, how are we supposed to approach it if it's not to escape from the Eitz HaChaim? And the basic idea, again, he's going to bring a bunch of this concept of Chachma versus Keser, which we're just going to sort of skip over that part, but I'm just going to get to sort of the main, where he sort of ties it back into the Pasuk, and he says, V'lachin. So that's why right away after this whole story is over, Hashem expels him from Gan Eden, right? He's like, you can no longer live in this pristine, pure, protected, innocent world, right? You're leaving Gan Eden. What do you have to do? Now you have to work the land that you came from. Right? You have to do the work of really like sifting through, grappling with that evil and really being able to overcome it, right? And all these, you know, planting and plowing and harvesting, those are all sort of different metaphors for ways that we engage with the world to do that. And then it says, "Ba'achar kach ba'achlu mimenu ba'aymer echad ba'ahavta hu mavar umayla." Right after you eat, you then you see the paragraphs of echad, which is right the last word of Shema, and ba'ahavta, which is developing this love for Hashem, and that's how you you engage with the world, and then you find a way to elevate that. Right, he has to really go to that place where it came from, and engage in that process of birurim. Okay. So now we get up to the part where we talk about what would have happened had they not eaten from the tree of knowledge. Right, like what was the plan? What did Hashem intend for the world to look like had they not eaten from the tree? And again, like this is a question a lot of the commentaries ask, which is, had they not eaten from the tree, it almost sounds like they wouldn't have had any free choice, right? They wouldn't have any like relationship with evil. Like, is that really what Hashem, what the intention for creation was? Like, isn't the whole purpose of creation for us to be human beings who have free choice, who engage with evil, who overcome it? What exactly was the kavana, sort of, if you could say, like, the plan A, had they not eaten from the trees?
And especially, like, what's so striking to me is, like, it's happening right away. It's like, okay, this is the fresh world. This is, like, it's at the beginning of the plan. So I feel like that just makes it more striking. It's like, okay, if it happened a few years in when we, so there was an original right. plan and then we shift. But, like, right. this is, it's like they're created and boom, this happens. So it's, like,
right.
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I wasn't going to go into that whole, because there's a whole piece about that. And then it goes back, after that piece, it goes back to talk about answering the question about the Nachash, right? Like, how did the Nachash know that this is what eating from the tree was going to be all about if Adam and Chava didn't know, right? Like, what was, what unique insight did the Nachash have? So I'm not going to read the whole thing inside here, but the gist of what he says here is that had they not eaten from the tree, there's another way that we could have engaged with evil in a sense and elevated it, right? And sort of the metaphor that he gives is like when you have like a giant bonfire and you have these little sparks that are attracted to the fire, right? So the fire doesn't go out and try to like pull those sparks in. They sort of on their own become drawn there, right? The other example of this is like in the times, the era in history, that's an example of this is the time of Shlomo HaMelech. That's like sort of the golden age of the Jewish people, where it says that all the other nations were like all the kings from like all the other nations would come to like see the wisdom of Shlomo HaMelech, right? He didn't have to go out and fight wars the way David HaMelech did. He was just remaining in his own place in the palace, and all these the other nations they came to him. They were just drawn to him to sort of bask in his wisdom, right? It describes the Queen of Sheba, right? How she comes to Shlomo HaMelech. So that's sort of this prototype of what the Avodah would have been, where we would have been able to sort of remain in our own pristine, pure state without having this personal relationship with evil, and we'd be able to have an impact just by radiating light, right? Like it says, La'avda Elushamra, the initial, when Hashem first tells them to go to the Gan Eden, La'avda Elushamra, what does La'avda Elushamra mean? It means to do mitzvahs, right? Do mitzvahs ase, mitzvahs leis ase. So with just by like radiating kedusha, right? Just by like fulfilling mitzvahs, learning Torah, like engaging with spirituality on its own, I guess kind of like what a tzaddik does, that would automatically impact the world, elevate the world, impact evil in this sort of like just as a natural byproduct of us engaging in our avodah in this more. Again, in a way that's removed from the evil. That's sort of the gist of what the mimer explains the world would have looked like.
So Dura Petach Tainim is still the original intention, and we're that it's just coming about in a different way.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have elements, I think also, like, I don't think the mimer is just telling us, oh, this one is the plan A, but we scratch that and it's gone. I think there are elements of that now too, right? Like we have certain people, we have certain eras, we have even certain parts of our lives where we engage with the world.
Like Avodas HaTzadikim versus Avodas Baal Teshuva.
Exactly.
Yeah. Where the tzaddik is able to engage with evil in a different way just because he is fully removed from it and it doesn't have any impact on him. Versus Baal Teshuva's engagement with negativity is going to obviously look differently because he is impacted by the evil.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also we have to realize that, it's like a tzaddik doesn't have bechira because he doesn't have You know, we say like, you know, a Tzadik Gomer doesn't have, you know, even evil inclination. Doesn't mean he doesn't have Bechira, right? First of all, there's choice within the realm of Kedusha, right? There's a whole world of Kedusha, you know, with which we can achieve, you know, spiritual heights. And again, evil still exists just as something removed, right? Like that friend who's the negative influence, right? It still exists, you know, in some form outside of us. Okay, so we're going to skip through to the end here, where it goes back to answer the question about the Nachash. So he says, so now we can understand why was it that the snake knew, he knew this, right? This secret that we've been talking about, the snake knew this all along, right? Adam Arishan Atzmai Shahaya Kule Kadesh, right? Adam Arishan himself, who's completely holy, Lamala Meitzah Das Tevara, he's removed from this whole realm of knowledge of good and evil. La Yata Hami Metzias HaRaklal, right? He has no awareness of evil. Again, he might know that it exists as this theoretical thing, right? But he has no experience of evil in any way. But what is the Nachash? Nachash is an embodiment, essentially, of this whole existence of evil. The Yada Miza, so he knows about it, right? He knows what it is. The Yada Shemasha Siva La'adam Shle Yachom Emanu Haya Bechdei Shle Yeh La'yidia Barak La'al, right? So he has this, he's very well aware that exactly what Hashem's concern with Adam eating from the tree is, right? He has an intimate knowledge of evil. He knows exactly what it is. Right, because Hashem doesn't want Adam to have to engage in this battle. So it says that the snake, right? So he was like very angry, you know, he's offended, right? That human beings are being protected from him, right? But they shouldn't even know about him, so that they won't, God forbid, stumble, right, and make a mistake because of him. Right, so he said to himself, listen, at least if I can convince, you know, Adam to eat from the tree, right, and then he can have this battle within himself, at least some of the time I'll be able to win, right? But if Adam would not know about evil at all, right? Then this snake, right, which is an embodiment of evil, right, would cease to exist, right? Like we described with that bonfire, where like everything just comes absorbed within that fire. It no longer has its own existence, right? Any spark of goodness just becomes absorbed within it. So it's almost like the snake has this knowledge that he's doomed to just cease to exist within this grand reality of Kedusha that Adam is going to radiate. So Ubaba Armumi is Tachava. So that's why he comes with this slyness to Chava. And again, our question here is like, why is it sly? Or what's sly about it? He's not lying, it's true, right? Everything he said was true. So what's sly about it? Kamaisha Amru Ba Asamach Memba Rachav Al HaNachash, right? This is a reference to a Medrash where it says that there was this angel from heaven that was sort of embodied in the snake. In this story, and that's why he says to them, "The day that you eat from me, you're going to be like God, knowing good and evil." Right, but all this is true, right? Not anything he said was a lie, right? But he's still speaking with this sort of it's deceitful the way he's presenting it, right? Right? He was presenting it as a positive thing, right? Sometimes somebody can say the same words, right? But the connotation is different, right? The message you're getting across is sort of the opposite point. Even though they're not hiding information from you, but they're presenting it in a misleading way. But in truth, it was actually like a negative thing. Even though they're going to be knowing good and evil, and above, that's totally, like, there's no problem with that at all, right? There's no damage in that. Right? Because the evil is separate. Right? Because like we said before, above, everything is in this state of makif. But the human being, if he were to have this knowledge of good and evil from this more pnimi, perspective, for him, that would be something that's very detrimental. Okay, so just to go back to our questions that we asked at the beginning, right? So again, we start off by just defining what is this Eta Das Tevera, right? What is it about knowledge of good and evil? Why is this sort of a threat, right? Why is this like a negative thing for them to, why is Hashem sort of trying to protect them from this good and evil? And even though it would seem like that's something that's positive, right? So we said, again, that the Das of Tevera is something which can be a positive thing if you're right, from the perspective of heaven, right? From the perspective of Makif, where we're able to look at things from this removed objective perspective, where we're able to make these differentiations between good and evil, right? Because we don't have this personal attachment to it, then knowledge of good and evil can be a positive thing, right? It can allow us to manipulate it and to refine it in a positive way, right? But in our world, Das of Tevera becomes a negative thing because the good and evil becomes mixed in with our own identity within ourselves. Right. And then we said,
it sounds to me a little bit, even just like a little bit of a parallel to Iskafia and Ishapcha, where when your knowledge of good and bad is a little bit more removed, then you have the ability to transform and engage with the bad in a way that it won't impact you, because there's a lot of clarity of what is good and what is bad. And there isn't that fear of like the bad coming to influence you, because there's a certain removal from it versus Iskafia is where when everything's all mixed up, sometimes it takes actually subduing the bad and like pushing it away and saying no to the evil because it's a part of us.
Right.
And we can engage with it safely.
Right. We can engage with it safely. Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot more risk involved in having any relationship to evil. Yeah. Right. And then our second question was about the Eitz HaChaim, right? Why is Hashem so nervous about them eating from the tree of life? And we said, again, once the evil becomes a part of our identity as human beings, then we can no longer escape to this realm where, right, that's beyond all evil, right? Where we're going to live forever, because now the evil's a part of us. And again, the way the Maamar puts it, we don't want the evil to live on forever as well. And therefore there has to be an end to our life so that we can eventually, right, that sort of symbolizes this eventual end to evil, right? The goal was for us to be able to actually work with the evil and eventually overcome it. And then finally, we asked about the Nachash, about the snake, right? Well, what insight did he have? And again, now that we understand that the snake is sort of this embodiment of that awareness of evil, he sort of had more insight, in a sense, than Adam himself, about what the dangers of eating from this tree were. So I think just to end off here, you know, in this mimer, we're sort of describing this interesting narrative where it almost sounds like Hashem has an initial plan, and then we as human beings sabotage that plan and take direct history in a totally different direction, which can sound problematic in some ways, and also can be a little confusing. Like, is this not the way it's supposed to be? Like, all of history is just going in a different direction. All this struggle, like, it wasn't really necessary, right? Also, like, emotionally, I feel like it can be difficult. And I think we have to have a certain understanding that, you know, there's a lot of components to this, and a lot of it's beyond the scope of this podcast. There's many, many sources that sort of discuss the philosophical issues here. But I think just, like, on a very, very basic level, we have to have a sense that even if on some level this wasn't, so to speak, the ideal plan or the ideal state that the world could have been in as it evolved through history, there's definitely like a purpose in the way it evolved practically, right? And I think both from the perspective of Adam and Chava themselves, right? There's other places in Chassidus where it describes that Chava wasn't just making a mistake. It wasn't just this, you know, she wasn't just like, you know, responding to this allure of the snake, but she realized that there's an advantage to this course of history, right? There's something about actually not just knowing about evil from a distance, but actually engaging with it from within ourselves, right? Battling that inner voice, that inner turmoil. There's some like very, very deep value in that. And she saw that, and that was part of what made her make that decision to eat from the tree in the first place. It's actually really fascinating. In our Nida course, we discuss this really fascinating Rishima that discusses, sort of gives us insight into why Chava specifically saw that more than Adam, right? Like specifically the woman was able to sort of see that see the advantage, see the value in that, and that type of approach to refining the world specifically. So I think both from the perspective of Chava and Adam, but also from the perspective of Hashem, of course, right? We have to say that Hashem had had, like, there was a purpose, right? Hashem saw a purpose in this course of history, and not just an equal, not only was it an equally good path to the ideal one, but in obviously this in is really the ultimately going to be the most profound way to achieve what history is supposed to achieve.
And I think just like this is thought came into my head right now, that like if we're thinking of the world of creation and like really about fostering a relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people and thereby making our home down here, both us and him together, no one goes into a relationship thinking about all the problems that are going to arise. And I think people do go, like at the beginning of the project, you enter in with a sort of rosy view of how, you know, things and all the ways and all the lessons and all the adages of how to make things go smoothly. And then no one asks for the challenges that come up. But then in hindsight, I think we can all look at challenges and see how, when we're forced to go deeper into ourselves, we end up being able to reach a much closer stages in our relationship through certain challenges, through certain, like through the Avaida, through like hard work, is we're able to reach a deeper place. And I think most of us can have experience in that and somewhere where we find that in our lives, where like that pushing and that little bit of struggle does force us to go deeper and brings out like a deeper result. So even if, you know, it is possible, and again, we don't ask for the struggle and we're not setting things up intentionally to struggle, but then once the struggle arises and once once our complexities are revealed in real life, then as we're working through them, we see the purpose in them and we see how it actually enhances the relationship.
Yeah. And I think also going back to that metaphor of like the parent and child, none of us want our children to suffer, right? We want to protect our kids. We don't want our kids to like have to go through pain and suffering. And not only that, but then once they do, we can see, like you said, in hindsight only, we could see how there was so much value and how they like grew so much and they became so strong and all of that. But I think like another thing to think about is that it has to be a plan B, right? If you were the parent who were like intentionally making your child suffer, that's just cruel, right? It can't be your initial plan, right?
Like God is the one who came up with it, with the transcript originally.
Right. Then it would be like, well, why are you putting us through this, right? It almost has to be that like, this is going to be the plan B. And then we have to see it after the fact. It can't be the way we go into it. It has to be like, after the fact, we realize like, oh, that brought me to a much deeper place.